Welcome back to the GCN Racing News Show. Coming up this week, Tadej Pogačar and UAE have asserted their dominance on the Tour de France already. I'll be looking at whether there's any chance of him being beaten this year and let you know why I think he is absolutely great for the sport. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Tim Melier is like a rocket ship. For his second stage win on Saturday, he came from outside the top 10 with just 300 metres to go and flew past everyone like they were standing still. That was genuinely an incredible display of power and sprint speed. We also learnt that the Tour de France has been so hot, some teams have had to transport extra bidons to the race, so high their consumption of them has been so far. Race organisers also took the decision to reduce yesterday's stage distance by around 30 kilometres due to the excessive temperatures. That does look set to change on Wednesday though, where temperatures start to ease slightly, at least according to the current forecast. And finally, we learned that Tadej Pogačar is firmly in the driving seat after the first block of stages at the Tour this year. His advantage of 2 minutes 42 seconds over Jonas Vingegaard is bigger than at this point in any of the four Tours he's previously won. Back in 2021, arguably his most dominant win, he was 2 minutes and 1 second in front of Ben O'Connor, who had made a lot of time up in a breakaway. That said, Uran and Vingegaard in 3rd and 4th were over 5 minutes down already by that point in the race. Either way, it's not looking good for anyone who had ambitions of beating Pogačar at this race, and to make matters worse for them, his team is looking as strong as they ever have. Now, pretty much all of his advantage came on stage 6, where they went over the Col du Tourmalet. There, they decimated the field, and although his advantage over Vingegaard was not that big by the top, he extended his lead on the descent, and then it ballooned on the long gradual climb to the finish line, where his absolute power was a huge advantage. For many, it was disappointing, and I do understand why. Even if it would have been and would be a surprise if Pogačar didn't win his fifth Tour this year, you want there to at least be some suspense deeper into the race. That suspense was there at the top of the Tourmalet, with Vingegaard pretty close behind, but by the finish, well, it was a different story. Now, you could blame the race organisers for putting such a brutal stage so early in the Tour this year, but they probably thought that having an easier climb at the finish might make things a bit more cagey, especially if more than one rider went over the top together at the front of the race. But this is 2026 and the era of Pogačar and UAE, so things are just a little bit different than they were before. For Pogačar himself, it marked his 23rd Tour de France stage win. How does that compare to Eddy Merckx's trajectory? Well, he was about 260 days older than Merckx when he'd won his 23rd. However, if Pogačar wins one more during this edition, he'll be matching Merckx, and if he wins two more, he's going to be ahead. And I certainly would not be someone prepared to bet against that either. But back to this race. Is there any way that Pogačar could still be beaten? Absolutely. He could crash out. That, or some very bad luck, is the only way, though, that I see anybody else being able to beat him. But there is a problem there, too. Because Tadej Pogačar has never pulled out of a UCI-ranked stage race. Since his first year as a junior rider, he started 46 stage races, with the cumulative days of those stage races amounting to 380. Not once has he pulled out. Not once has he crashed hard enough or got sick enough to pull out of a stage race. Now, I mentioned this on social media last week. It's a superpower he's got that's quite rarely spoken about. Now, you could argue that the chances of crashing are much slimmer when A, you spend a lot of time off the front solo, and B, when you're in the bunch, you're a lot more lucid than everybody else because you're not so close to your limit. And they're both legitimate points, but I still think it's a phenomenal stat. What we do know is that Jonas Vingegaard will not give up. He never does. And that's also what makes him such a champion. But it's certainly the battle for the podium places, plus the white jersey, polka dots and green, that look like they're going to be more entertaining battles over the remaining 12 stages of the race. Now, the other question I wanted to pose and answer from my own perspective is whether or not Tadej Pogačar's dominance is bad for the sport. I mean, there's no doubt it's less suspenseful. Anyone who's been watching bike racing for the last few years is kind of able to predict when Pogačar will win, and more often than not, they would be right. And for many, that is not what sport is about. You want suspense, unpredictability, drama, chaos even. Currently, with the yellow jersey though, we have none of that. But my opinion is that Tadej Pogačar is brilliant for our sport, because he's going to be bringing lots of new fans to it. It's kind of the superstar effect. And we've seen it in the past in other sports, haven't we? Tiger Woods in golf is probably the first that comes to mind. Back in his heyday, when he was playing, TV ratings were often doubled or tripled despite his dominance at the time. Usain Bolt is another. I mean, personally, I couldn't name you any of the current crop of 100-metre sprinters, but I would absolutely tune in when Bolt was racing a major championship. Phil Taylor and now Luke Littler in darts, Simone Biles in gymnastics, Serena Williams in tennis. They have all helped to elevate their sports beyond where they were before their dominant period. And that's one of the reasons why I do still enjoy watching Pogačar race. Not only do I still find it fascinating just how good he is, I'm also thinking about the thousands or even millions of new fans that he's bringing into our sports. Fans who, for a large part, will probably be lifelong lovers of cycling, having learnt how beautiful it is. Now, his time at the top will be finite, obviously. Other champions will emerge, and even if they're not as good, they will definitely benefit from the Pogačar effect. And just to give one data point on this, France TV reported a 56% TV audience share during the Tourmalet stage on day 6, which is huge. Your thoughts might be different to mine, though. Perhaps you or people you know are switching off racing because of his dominance. Let me know in the comments section just down below. So what about the rest of the race, then? Well, when I list the stage winners so far, I think it emphasises just how incredibly hard it is to win a Tour de France stage. Visma, Del Toro, Pogačar, Pedersen, Coy, Pogačar, Mollier, Van der Poel. I mean, what an incredible list of riders. Coy winning his first ever sprint stage at the Tour de France must have felt so good to him. And I'm sure Decathlon are relieved they made the choice to take him to the race. That took a lot of pressure off them as a team, whilst they still have plenty to fight for with Seksas and Coy himself. Pedersen's win on stage 4 was probably the most dominant I've ever seen a team be in a Tour de France breakaway. There wasn't one point that day where Lidl Trek didn't have things completely under control. Mollier has underlined his reputation as the current fastest sprinter in the world with back-to-back wins that were both as impressive as each other, whilst yesterday's win from Mathieu van der Poel was an absolute masterclass on what must have been one of the hardest stages of the race so far, even if it was shortened. 2,700 metres of climbing, 44.6 kilometres per hour average. I was having a quick look on Strava, and Michael Fahlgren had an average power of 280 watts, normalised to 330, and he finished 17 minutes down. Baptiste Weisstrofers was even higher, and he was in the same group. Van der Poel is amazing though, isn't he? We've barely seen anything of him apart from a couple of lead-outs over the first week of the race, to the point where people were questioning how fit, or indeed how motivated he was. But then he comes out on the first stage that he's properly targeted, does everything to perfection, and then sprints to the win. I still find it hard actually to believe that that was only his third stage win at the Tour de France in his career, but when he does win there, he does it in style, doesn't he? Fair play to Johannessen though. To have stuck to Van der Poel's wheel on that kind of finish, it's kind of a win in itself. But you did have to feel for Tom Pidcock. Now, a lot of you probably saw he'd had trouble with his gears with around 20Ks to go. It turned out that his shifters on the hoods were working, but not the ones that he uses on the drops. But he forgot that in the initial kick to the line. By the time he'd gone back to the hoods, any chance of a stage win had gone. Although, as he pointed out in his post-race interview, it was always going to be a tall order to beat Van der Poel in that particular finish. Behind them, Pedersen was beaten by Filippo Ganna in the sprint from the following group, but it was still a positive day for his green jersey ambitions. He sits 45 points clear of Gumai, 55 in front of Mollier. Those two certainly aren't out of that competition though, not at all, nor is Philipsen, in fact, in fourth. Pedersen was going to have to keep chipping away on the stages that suit him better than the others. Lidl Trek lead the team's classification, almost half an hour in front of UAE after their stage 4 exploit, whilst Pogačar leads the KOM, 9 points in front of Vingegaard. That one still has a long way to go though, whilst Lenny Martinez is in third in that competition. But what about the white jersey? Well, that looks like it could be a great battle. Del Toro leads at the moment ahead of Ayuso, Seksas and Martinez, but those four are separated by just 54 seconds. Likewise, just 1 minute 39 seconds separates Vingegaard in second to Martinez in ninth on GC. So the fight for the podium is going to be a big one, possibly even for second place, although I still think Vingegaard should get that reasonably comfortably with the terrain that's still to come. Whatever your thoughts though, I would say there is a lot still to look forward to in this race, yesterday's stage being a prime example. They are racing hard, day in, day out, despite the temperatures, so you never know when cracks are going to appear. Now, speaking of cracks appearing, I was absolutely gutted to see Torsten Tryon exit the race for Uno X. So the Norwegian had been in the yellow jersey for a couple of days going into the Tourmalet stage, but having been dropped from the front group, he then crashed in the descent when he clipped the wheel of his teammate just in front of him. Now, he did manage to finish that stage, but wasn't able to start the following day due to 4 broken ribs and a confirmed concussion. And he must have been absolutely devastated to go out like that. But for the rest of his days, he's going to be able to say that he wore the yellow jersey at the Tour de France, which is amazing. Heel up, Torsten, and well done. Okay, before I move on to other races, a reminder, we've got a whole load of GCN merchandise for sale at the moment that all celebrates the biggest race in the world. So we've got a special edition Camelback water bottle, a print, which I've got down here that's part of a larger collection, and a range of t-shirts, including 2 new designs, one of which I am sporting today. You can find them all over at shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or simply scanning the QR code that should be on screen now. Right, on to other races, and there aren't as many on at the same time as the Tour de France, for obvious reasons, but the Tour of Austria took place last week, and there were some notable performances. Not least from Nielsen Paulus. So the EF rider has not raced since February after knee surgery and then complications afterwards, but he got away with Igor Arrieta on stage 3 and outsprinted him at the finish. Andrea Bagioli of Lidl Trek won from a small group that contested the win on stage 4. That was his first win in almost 3 years, while Sam Watson won the final stage for Net Company Ineos, narrowly beating Vincenzo Albanese. Now, the GC in the first 2 stages, though, were dominated by Gregor Mühlberger for Decathlon. On the opening day, he soloed to the win by 11 seconds ahead of Kevin Vermaak of UAE. And then the next day, he was over a minute in front of EF's James Shaw. Mühlberger comfortably won the GC and must be wondering why he wasn't selected to help Paul Seksas in the mountains at the Tour de France. Second overall went to Vermaak, whilst Bauke Mollema took his first GC podium in 5 years with third at the age of 39. So remarkably, we had a 5-day stage race where UAE Team Emirates won nothing. Well, except for the points classification with Vermaak. Right, that is all for this week's show. Thanks for watching. I'll be back next Monday to wrap up week 2 of the Tour de France, plus the Baloise Ladies Tour in Belgium. See you then.